first ever pro cycling rep 2019. New season is coming soon. This is Astana Pro Team. Skrrra. No somos solo un equipo, sino una gran familia.
I'm Vino. Behind me is Martino.
Hi, ciao, salam and hola. Our shirts are in the blue color. We are the only team who were blue before. All the other blue teams is better to ignore. Our leaders of the gangs, this is Jacob Pugelsen and Lunchenko on the couple champagne bottle. It's Lopez Superman climbing fastest his plan. With support of the team, they are like a machine.
Welcome, 2019 Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 96. This is Tyler Yonke, joined with Chris Flower. Chris,
hey, is this really the first one of 2019?
Yes, I believe so. Did you do something over the holidays?
I did stuff. I don't think I recorded it.
You didn't? Well,
that's for everybody's best. What is it? Today's the 17th?
The 18th.
We took a vacation.
We took a vacation, and not so much. I mean, we did some riding.
That's true.
You want to talk about a little bit about some of the riding we did? New Year's Day.
New Year's Day was brutal. Yeah, so I think we took it upon ourselves to really just like cram as much 2019 fitness in the first 2 weeks. That way it's like, well, in July we can look back on it and say, hey, we rode hard in 2019.
All right. So, I mean, New Year's Day, it was freezing cold. We dressed up-ish.
Yeah.
Did a 106-mile ride.
It was a good ride, too.
And there was, 5,000 feet of climbing out by Plymouth and around from starting from Folsom, right?
Yeah, we went Folsom out to Ione, and then we looped around to the backside of Volcano, down to Plymouth, and then back to Folsom. So it was a good little loop and a bunch of roads I'd never been on a bike before.
Right, and some of the concern was getting back in time because we left, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Hoping to get back in time, and the road that we were taking to coming back into town was a little sketchy. And then there was one point out there in the middle of nowhere where our teammate John Novikov needs some food because I guess he didn't take enough. I'd been handing him food all day. He finds a restaurant. It's literally like the only restaurant in town that's open New Year's Day.
Right.
And we're kind of waiting out there. Next thing you know, he sticks his head out and he's got like a cup of coffee, not to go cup. I'm sitting down. Right. He's like at the balcony chilling out there getting a burrito.
And it wasn't like a burrito from a case. It was a order from the chef burrito, and I'm sure it was very custom.
Right. And, whatever. We made it back in time. It was a good ride. Then just last weekend, we went and did, and we'll talk maybe a little bit more about this later, big ride out in Boonville. Did that Fish Rock. You say it's a race. I call it a Grand Prix, Grand Fondo. But how's everyone else's racing doing for 2019? Everyone fit, ready to go? Because we've already had one race.
I hope they are. The next real race is coming up in 2-ish weeks.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a week from this weekend, right?
Is it that soon?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got it on here. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. First of all, I'm Tyler Yonke. Chris Flower is here with me. Kurt Mills is not here. This is a way to start off 2019 with a bang. Already, just like we brought it in or left it, the 2018 coming in the same way. Okay, let's talk about a few things. So we're going to talk some of the World Tour 2019, some of the teams, some of the kits, little different moves that's happened with that. Give you a little update. Santos Tour Down Under is underway. I think they have, 4 stages under their belt already?
Yep.
A geriatric guy busted for PEDs. We'll go over that because that's kind of a big thing in the news. Some things that make you go, We'll talk about the Fish Rock, what I call the Grand Fondo, the experience out there. San Bruno Hill Climb results, some winners and losers, and whatever else just comes into our mind.
Yeah.
Ready to light this candle?
Let's do it.
That's another comment that Kurt will have. Okay.
He needs to be here to correct those.
This is just some things I found scouring the news this week. And if you have any other additions you want to throw in, please by all means do.
I will.
Or if you have any conversation about this. CCC gets their first win. We'll talk about that a little bit. Patrick Bev, obviously all the teams that are winning now are getting their first win, and it's a big deal to kind of capture that first world tour.
Right. So now that was Patty Bevan that got the win on stage two. So he had previously won the New Zealand national championship. Now, does that count as a team win or is that not really?
I don't
world tour level.
I don't think that's quite the same. Okay. Especially, I mean, because you could be the Italian national championships, which is probably, you know, much more difficult than.
Right.
No offense to New Zealand. I mean, you may have to fight one or two really solid guys, but it doesn't mean that your win isn't valid. It's just this field depth. Kind of.
Either way, he's having a good start to the year.
He's looking very good, and we will go into that. EF Education First, they showed out their new kit. Seen it online when they showed it. It was just the jersey, and I was dismayed. I was like, way to go, Vodders. You've held to your own standards. Good job. It's ugly. And then when I saw it with the shorts, I'm coming around to it.
Cause are you?
I
okay.
like the dark blue shorts with it.
Yeah.
It makes the pink palatable.
Gotcha.
Almost.
They blend.
Of course,
well.
My house has been inundated with a skunk all week, so I don't know what my palate is. But what do you think about it?
So I'm not as offended by the pink. I don't care for the weird like airbrushing on the front. It's right. a little odd. It's good to have a different color in the field like that, because it seems like there's so many teams of the same color. A lot of red teams this year. So
yeah.
It's red or kind of orangish hues. So it's good to have that. Different shade in there to kind of shake things up.
It goes that way, right? Like some different colors, and all of a sudden one year, I think off season, you know, no one puts in their bid for a color and someone gets to approve it and say, nope, this one's already taken.
Right.
So all of a sudden you have a rash of like red, like Northern California, all of a sudden everyone's going blue.
Right. Yeah. It seems like it'd be good for the designers just to not share your design, but say, hey, we're kind of going in this direction.
Yeah.
So that way it's not everybody in the field getting confused with one another.
Right. Right. So anyway, Sven and, Tuft. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and Education First. I think they've dropped Drapac, or they've kind of parted ways. So they've kind of gone solo. I think they picked up a new sponsor. I just don't remember the name.
Yeah, we'll have to look back into. I know Drapac was kind of their. I think it's construction, some other business stuff in Australia, and that guy was big into
dealerships of cars.
Okay, same thing.
Close?
No, not even close. but Aussie guy, and I think. I don't know what his involvement is. Maybe he just wasn't feeling like he was getting the bang for his buck, or he wants to move into Mitchelton Scott, more Aussie.
He still has like their equivalent of the Pro Conti Tour level team.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
I think it was probably a bigger financial commitment than he was seeing rewards for.
Gotcha.
I think he was definitely trying to branch out into the US and it probably just wasn't working. So
right, right. His college dealerships. Sven Tufts is with the Rally UHC. I just thought that was interesting. He's, you know, done the world tour, kind of another Danny Pate. In a sense, coming over with them, and we'll see how that goes. Andrea Taffy, who we've been talking and joking about for a while, I'm seeing that he's finding it hard to nail down a team for that Robay. And my comment was, well, no joke. I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty. It's not that you're just trying to do some, you know, Grand Fondo. It's Prairie Robay,
right? And especially if you want to contend, I mean, you've got to be obviously on stellar form.
Steroids? Oh,
well, that too.
Stellar.
So, yeah, I'd be surprised if he lands on a World Tour team. And if he does, they're not going to say, hey, we want you to be the A guy. It's like, you know, we want you to shuttle bottles up in the first 100K. And I doubt that's something he wants to do. So he's going to probably have to hold out for maybe a wild card team that wants some kind of compelling story to earn their wild card spot.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be interesting to see how long he still pushes this whole
right.
thing. So. One other item here, Yanni Brakovic failed an I didn't even know he had failed an anti-doping test. I guess it was got a 10-month suspension back
right.
in April. And Slovenian, I think is what he is, 35 years old. He's basically not going to fight it. And some of his comments were interesting. He's like, I just don't have the energy or the money anymore. And it goes back to what we were talking about with Froome last year where, you know, kind of a minor little thing to fight, but man, he dumped a ton of money, I'm sure, or Sky
right.
into it, and it looks like for Froome at least it paid off. But this is what you see a lot of guys doing. They're just like, I give up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's if you don't have the money to do the legal side of it, you're really out of luck because you're not going to be able to take that on yourself.
Right. 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 But 10-month suspension. They obviously said they must have believed him for what it was.
Right.
Tainted meat. Once again, another tainted meat guy.
That's going around.
Right.
Who is he riding with?
Well, he had been with all kinds of. I'm trying to remember. Astana maybe was the last team.
Okay.
I almost think he was down onto a Conti Slovenian team last year. So he doesn't have a contract for this year. But you know, he's been with Discovery Channel, Astana. You know, some big teams going forward. It was also interesting just to see. Kind of, he had written a blog post about it and. Talking about being bullied, choked out by teammates, told he was, you know, no good, never going to race again. I mean, so I don't know if this was kind of inferring to like, I wasn't going down that dark path of drugs. Right. And here, this is how I was ostracized.
Sounds like he may have been on the wrong team, but at 35, coming off a 10-month suspension.
I think he's done.
Yeah, he's not going to have much success finding a team.
No.
He may have to join Taffy in their collective hunt.
20-year difference there.
Right.
Yeah. I saw this as well. Wanty Group, Gobert, and Cofidis received their Tour de France wildcard bids. Already? I mean...
Yeah, that definitely seems early, and I think that probably goes back to...
There are French guys on there.
There's definitely French guys on the team, but what was the Irish team that folded last year that was up in Aqua Blue kind of commenting on the wild card process for those Grand Tour events just being a little gray. And if they're already selecting these guys, it's like, well, what's the criteria? And
right.
Are some of these other kind of fringe level teams really in a position to contend for a spot?
Right. Did you have any World Tour news, NorCal news even, that you wanted to throw in there that was something of interest?
Not so much NorCal. It's cool to see Svinetoft come back to Rally. Not come back to Rally, but come to Rally. I think there's a handful of Canadian racers on that team, so to kind of have him in that senior statesman role and being a fellow Canadian, I think it'll be cool to have that element and his experience guide them along, because they're really the current U.S. powerhouse non-World Tour team.
Well, so. I believe their director is Eric Wolberg, famed continental Canadian, good time trialist, etc. So there's that connection as well. Yeah, you're right. I was thinking, maybe, and you can, just something off the top of my head here, but I know you have more details, was Melanie Wong and Arya Kiani, is that right?
Yes.
He went to Illuminate, I think, and she got picked up by 2020.
Yep.
So... That's pretty impressive for both of those.
Definitely. It seems like that'd be a challenge for Melanie Wong, because I believe she's mid-30s and has a full-time job. So I don't know how she manages her time to be able to juggle both those obligations. But that's definitely an impressive jump from kind of the domestic elite scene, so to speak. And then Kiani, I mean, we saw, we looked on Strava this weekend after having done the Fish Rock route and kind of looking at some of his times. He's definitely an impressive climber and a really strong guy. So it makes sense that he'd be able to transition over to Team Illuminate. And I think he's got some connections with Cameron Piper, who moved over to Illuminate as well. So
I think he won like the Santa Cruz race a few years ago, but did he also do the Red Bull the first year? Didn't he win that outright?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, he goes uphill well. He's right, obviously a good rider.
Definitely.
And anything else struck your interest? Yeah, new team jerseys out for the NorCal. I mean, I saw Rio had, it's like blue-ish something.
Outside of that, I haven't really seen any local team jerseys. I've seen ours, obviously.
Have you?
Because it just not came in person. I have to go pick it up. I hopefully pick it up this afternoon.
Ours is a drastic change from last year.
Right. But so outside of
flip the script.
Outside of that, I haven't seen any actual new kits in person. So I'm not sure if there's going to be any major changes. But even in the World Tour ranks, I think we had talked about on the last show is like CCC, obviously they stand out because they're bright orange, and Sunweb's gone to all red, but outside of that, it's just kind of, we'll have to wait and see for NorCal.
Yeah, of course. Okay, let's get into Santos Tour Down Under. Before that, do you have any notes or comments on, because they do their national championships, so they had those, they had their crit and their road, I think time trial. Same with the Kiwis, the New Zealanders?
I think they're Kiwis, yeah.
I don't know.
They are for now.
They're all Limeys.
Easy. We know that Paddy Bevin won New Zealand, but one of the things that was interesting in the Australian National Championships, typically the winner of the Australian National Championship, if they're not on a World Tour team, they get kind of like an auto berth onto the team, Unisa team, so that they can ride the Tour Down Under. And the winner this year, Friedman, I believe is his last name?
Yeah, I believe so.
Older guy, former World Track world champion, so he's got some experience, but he didn't get selected to be on the Unisa team, and there's a lot of kind of controversy within Cycling Australia and some of the media outlets down there about, you know, it kind of not being great to not have your national championship jersey in your biggest race of the year. And I guess Cycling Australia's argument is that, you know, they're trying to focus on U23 riders, and that they felt like they made the selection criteria clear from the beginning, and the rider who'd won the national championship felt otherwise. So he's sitting out the tour down under, but he's going to race, I guess, in
Harold Sun Tour or Cadell's.
Cadell Evans, okay. Great Ocean Road Race, right. Whatever it's called. It is. So kind of a bummer to not see him in that race, since he'd be kind of representing the jersey and felt like he would be able to kind of complement that team.
So it's also interesting where they have their crit championships, and then they start in with the Bay People's Choice Award,
right?
Which is like, they call it a crit, and I think it might be.
It was like a mile.
But Luke. I know last year Sagan wore his world championship jersey, which is a road race.
Right. Well, that's because
it's Sagan. And then Cadell's winning his crit jersey.
Caleb.
So, I'm sorry, Caleb. Yeah. Cadell might have been doing it too, though. Did you check in the stands? So
I know that
it was like Folsom Crit all over again, with world championships, everything going to Chris.
So I don't think Caleb did the crit this year for the Australian National Championship. So he, I think, was sitting that out and hoping to focus for a good result in the National Championship road race. And I don't think he made any of the selections for the breaks in the road race. So that was kind of potentially a wasted effort. So he didn't carry any cool team jerseys into the Tour Down Under.
Right, right. And I did hear a podcast from Australia, the SBS podcast, and they were talking about how the course that they've used there, it's come out with sprint finishes, it's come out with little breaks, climbers. I mean, so they're saying, you know, it's a pretty good course because it feeds every type of situation you can have. So I didn't really see much of it either way.
I didn't see much either. I couldn't really find a feed. I did look for it. I think if you were like a paying member of SBS, you could get it. But yeah, it definitely provides a course where a different type of rider can win each year, assuming that the field allows that to happen. Because from what I understand, there's been some kind of grumbling in Australia about, why are we using the same course year after year after year after year? And it just, it seems like it's a good course. It's at this point kind of an established course, easy to set up. So it makes sense to keep using it.
Well, and we'll just go right into, the People's Choice Classic was won by Caleb Ewing.
Yes.
Nice sprint. He held off Sagan, and I don't know, Viviani was in there.
Alex Edmondson got third too, which is kind of odd.
I think, you know, there was a crash before on the last corner that kind of derailed some of that. But, you know, the whole Tour Down Under has this great thing that they do, which is they're set in Adelaide, and then they just have your racing going from there. So they pretty much have this central location for a week, which is pretty damn cool. What'd you think of the sprint? And then why don't you talk about some of the stages coming up? And my highlight so far has been listening to missing Paul Sherwin more than I thought I would, because I'm forced to listen to Jens Voigt.
Yeah, no, we did watch the People's Classic in Boonville on an iffy feed through NBC Sports. But it was a kind of as expected race. Brake goes up the road. Field kind of lets them dangle until 10 laps, and then they pull them back. And it looked like it was just going to set up for a really good sprinter's finish, but there was a crash in the last corner. It looks like it derailed Viviani and a couple other sprinters. And basically,
did you ever get to the bottom of that? I tried looking a bit, and I couldn't tell if it was Sky's problem. I really wanted it to be theirs, but I couldn't tell if it was them or some other guy. I did see a guy sliding out, but I couldn't tell if it was. But anyway,
one of the guys I think that took the brunt of the fall was an Astana rider, because I've seen him in subsequent stages, and he just looks like a mummy.
Okay, I know that's going to be my next question. If you've noticed that anybody's really been injured from this, is not the way you want to start your season with going down in a crit.
No, especially from what I understand, the crit's not really a requirement for the tour, so you can kind of have different riders in there. But anyway, Kluger for Lotto Soudal gave Ewan a perfect lead out, and he just threw down a good sprint, took the win. Sagan was in there on kind of the PR stunt bike. He was on an aluminum bike, just to kind of show that an aluminum bike can hang.
To Jason Williams. Justin Williams, sorry.
Right.
He had the stunt bike too last year.
And obviously they didn't hold back Sagan, but he was in there, took second. It looked like a clean sprint for the guys that got through the crash, but what could have been? And I think up to this point, we've gone through four stages of the Tour Down Under. And unfortunately, usually when I tune in, the stage is well underway and a little break is up the road. I think in the first three stages, it's been pretty similar where you get a break up the road and then the field just kind of settles in and just does the usual wait until 30K to go and start reeling them in. I think the first stage ended up in a pretty good field sprint. It was a little uphill, a little headwindy, and I think there was it was on the next day there was a crash. So stage one was a pretty clean sprint. Sunweb, Maxwell Sheed jumped really early for being both uphill and into the headwind, and I think he jumped at like 300 meters and looked like he had a clean 3 or 4 bike length gap, and then Viviani just bounced through the field and was able to come right around Walsh Sheed and win by a solid bike length himself.
What was interesting about that one, I was expecting Caleb after the first one, and he got kind of pushed in the back. Right. There was it wasn't a wreck, but some guys took the wrong path.
Right.
And I don't know if some of those sprinters, it is some confusion enough where the sprint was not pure. And look, you only have like maybe a handful of sprinters, Sagan, Ewing, Viviani, Van Poppel,
right,
and I don't really know who else you got. I mean, then you're McClay,
Bauhaus,
yeah. So then you're second, third tier ones,
right? Yeah, I think there was a left hand turn at 1K to go, and it was in kind of in a roundabout, and some guys went outside of the cones, and it was like,
and the road didn't come back and join,
right? So they had to hop curbs or do something evasive to get back into the field, and if you're doing that, you're slotting in far back. Kind of a bummer, but. I think stage
hot day.
It was really hot. It was a 45 centigrade.
I like how that rolls off your tongue.
So natural. But no, it was definitely hot, a little windy. Stage two, also really hot. Same thing. It was a couple rollers, but brake got out, got pulled back with like 20K to go. And then one of the FDJ riders did kind of a little attack with 20K to go, had a little gap, and he looked back at the field hoping that they would just pull him back in. Nobody went with him, and he looked almost just kind of disappointed that he was now stuck, and basically you got to stay there. So he rolled solo until about 3K to go, got swept up, and then that led into another little uphill field sprint. And in that one, Paddy Bevin, of all people, took the win, and he held off Caleb Ewan, who got third. Peter Skon got fourth, and Ilya Viviani was in the mix too. Seventh. But it was something like that. Yeah. So it was an interesting sprint because you wouldn't think of him as being a sprinter in his own right, let alone being able to hold off those guys. So.
Right. And I guess the uphill, he kind of jumped ahead and held him off. It was interesting hearing the commentary, Phil Liggett's like, none of the sprinters are there because I don't know, there was a wreck.
Right.
But then they're all in the top 10.
Yeah.
So well done. And once again, I'm just going to work on these guys over here. Robbie McEwen had it at least helped him out. But it wasn't Bevin sprinting against Mike Woods. It was Bevin. Well, teammate. No, they're not teammates. But it was, he had to go up against him. I mean, Caleb couldn't come around him. Right. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, it was definitely, it looked like Caleb tried to come around him, got into the wind, was like, oh.
Bevin's a big guy.
Yeah.
Well, and then that leads into like some of the next few days. Viviani gets in the break.
Right.
Was that corkscrew or
no.
There was another little climb that they had right before the finish there. Right. They went over like 7 times.
Yeah.
And he's up in the break. They finally get shelled up, but Bevin, I don't even think about it. I'm like, oh, he's going to be losing this, but he holds. I don't know. Do you want to recap that one?
Yeah, I think you just kind of did. I mean, really they just did a few loops around a hilly circuit. And I think this is the one where, we were kind of exchanging texts as it was going on, and it was like, okay, we're on the last lap. There's a couple rollers.
You don't super fast run in.
Yeah, you don't want to bring Sagan to the line. I think it was Woods and one of the, I think it was a Quick Step rider, just started launching attacks just to try and shake it up.
Devonins or something.
Yeah.
Dries.
Sounds right. Sure.
Just make a bunch of names.
I enjoyed that stage, even though I'm not the biggest Sagan fan. It was just cool to see Woods finally not wait for a move to happen, but to actually try to instigate it. So he's coming around and being more of an attacker instead of just a follower.
Right. So Impey comes around and he starts leading that, and you can just tell he's geared out.
Right.
Sagan comes around and pretty easy
for
the win. So he's already got his win for the year. So CCC, Sagan's got his, Viviani's already got his.
Right.
I don't know if you count Caleb's because it's the crit. Next day, last night for us, we had climb up this corkscrew, which was pretty good. And they were, once again, this SBS podcast was talking about that and saying, or maybe it was Cycling News, that, you know, they feared even putting it in the race because it was so steep. But I'm watching, I'm like, it's not that harrowing compared to some stuff we watch. So
no.
In matter of fact, it regrouped at the top. If it was so steep, I mean, there was like 5K after this finish. You talk about Woods, he looked really good.
He did.
He attacked a few times. I heard on Cycling News today, Bennett was saying, oh, he wished the move had gone earlier. They were saying this to Woods, and Woods goes, well, that's his problem. Then he could have gone earlier. He goes, you know, Bevan was already coming off the back.
Right.
He's like, I attacked.
Yeah.
Why are you complaining that it didn't? And evidently he's done that recon on that. So he's ready for this race.
Woods is.
Okay. And he was complaining that, I guess he was yelling at Richie Porte at some point, get off your brakes. So I like how he kind of calls people out after the race.
Right.
He has no problems.
Yeah.
I guess when you're riding well and you're feeling confident, you just say whatever.
Yeah. I don't know much about that climb in terms of what it would compare to around here locally. But it didn't seem that steep. The jumpy, climbier guys were able to get a break, but they didn't put that much time on the 10, 15 guys that were kind of that tier two climber.
Right, about 10 seconds or so.
Right. It wasn't enough where they couldn't get back together again.
No, so Bevan stays there.
Right.
And he actually gets, I think, second, some time bonuses. So he's even put it, instead of them distancing, they actually, he put some time on them. Wout Poels up in the front there with Richie Porte, Bennett, and Woods. And you're really, I mean, you're a big Sky Poels fan, so I know you
were
pretty excited about that.
It was interesting seeing the difference in style, because you kind of get a sense that he probably rides more Chris Froome type of riding style.
They were attacking a little bit with those three.
Yeah, so he's probably more accustomed to like just set it at a high tempo and hold it, but they were definitely jumping a little bit, and you could see him get gapped and then pull it back, get gapped and pull it back, where if it was a longer climb, they may have been able to put more time into him and drop him. But
right, and actually Richie Porte had said, an interview with him said, he goes, I didn't think we were going all that, you know, he wasn't at his max. In other words, he felt pretty good. They were doing these little efforts, and he was actually surprised to kind of gap everyone off.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, if that's the case, then maybe you should have hit the gas a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you look back and you see that you're getting separation, keep it up.
And you're feeling like this is no big deal.
Right.
You're not going to win the overall if you don't. Well, I guess he puts all his eggs in the Wollongong basket.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what's coming up, I believe, tonight.
Yeah. And then who won that stage yesterday?
So yesterday, good call. They have about 5K left. They rounded those four back in. And then Daryl Impey, South Africa.
That's right. Yeah.
Gets his chance to you know, defending champ from last year.
Right. Yeah.
Of taking that. So
he got a time bonus too, obviously.
Time bonus. Bevan got, like I said, second. He's still up there. So it'll be interesting because today, I mean, look, Woods looks really good. And we can flash back, I think, two or so years ago when he first came out there. He was one guy that was in shouting distance of Porte going up the climb of Wollongong. So it'll be interesting. And I think he's matured much more. I didn't see it looking yesterday that Porte could just put it down on him. But that's a different climb. That's like an out of the saddle. It's a Dan Martin type of thing, right? Yeah. Where you're sprinting for like a minute plus, just full out. You probably know that it's like Beatty, right? Isn't that what we discussed basically?
Wollongong?
Yeah.
I don't think it's that.
You got to say it a little more Aussie, like Wollongong.
Wollongong, eh?
Oh, that's Canadian.
That's how Woods would say it, huh?
Right.
You want a kind of a segue or a tangent here, kind of going back into some of your world tour news. So your favorite rider.
Wait.
Who could that be?
I don't know. Kurt Mills?
No. Phil Guymon. He's down.
Oh, I thought you meant a non-retired writer.
Retired.
I might as well go with Chris Horner.
So he's in Australia picking up his new bike from his new bike sponsor because he's no longer affiliated with Cannondale.
Oh, boy.
So he was down there and took it upon himself to try and take the KOM on Wollongong Hill. I think it was yesterday. Didn't even crack top 25. Claimed that there was too great of a headwind and it was just an effort for which he's been upset over, and he's now leaving the country. But a fresh Phil taking a run at it. I think he wasn't even within 30 seconds of Richie Porte's KOM from 3 or 4 years ago. So,
well, I know that comes in there. It's windy,
right?
And they'll have their. But I mean, that's which means you're utilizing people actually drafting up the climb on this. And I'm sorry, I know Phil can climb well, but this is not, it's a different type. It's not a climber's climb.
Right.
It's a punchy, it's Valverde Woods Porte climb. I don't think that's at all. I mean, we saw, if he was able to put up a KOM there, he would have been more in the mix at the Bay Hill Red Bull climb type
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have those kind of legs.
No, definitely not. And I think that's...
those are my kind of... No, I'm just kidding.
Because I think the effort up that is like 7 minutes. I think Richie Porte somewhere around like 6:40.
Oh, is it really that long?
Yeah, it's a longer climb. But again, it's got kind of a shallow lead into it where the grade starts. And again, it's shallow enough where you can probably fetch a good draft.
I think that last bit, though, is where they really go. I mean, it's the last minute and a half
right.
of just all out.
Yeah, you can kind of get a sense of where it probably gets steep is that's when we're, that's Richie's attack all point. Right.
Well, that would be interesting to watch. That's tonight. So when you're listening to this, it'll have already happened. So.
I don't think Wallunga Hills tonight.
Well, it ends tomorrow
right.
for us, so it should be tonight.
I think they're doing Wallunga Hills the last day, aren't they?
I think this is good research. Why don't we check that out? And see what we can get while we keep going. Okay. Anything more with Australia while this happens?
Not for me.
Okay. I'm going to talk about this 90-year-old tainted meat guy. So he was doing Masters Nationals. Only guy in his field. He's 90 years old. The only reason they tested him is because he set a world record.
Right.
And at that age, I think it's just you're living and you're riding. You're going to get a record. That's what we've talked about before. Just thinning the herd. And you're able to do that. So... Name is Carl Grove. He was given an anti-doping test, like I said, because set a new age group world record at Masters Track Nats in 2018. And according to Velo News, USADA did not ban him from competition. The organization determined that the epitrenbolone positive was non-intentional and, quote, more likely than not caused by contaminated meat. USADA handed Grove the lowest sanction that is allowed to give for an anti-doping violation, Tiger said. Travis Tigert, who's part of USADA now, I believe. You know, there's a few things that jump out when we first saw this and it was posted online, which was, you know, why are they spending race clean money on, I don't know if that's the race clean money, but USADA money on, and I've told you about going to nationals and the crit and they just tell us, we're not testing today.
Right.
I guess part of it is with being USOC and everything like that. If you set a world record, therefore you have to test. So... Da, 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 da. It didn't sound like at all they believed that it was a, like they said, it was unintentional, not a problem. Right. My biggest question though is this is in the US, right? Mm-hmm. Carlsbad, I think that's what it is. What the F you eating tainted meat? What kind of place is he eating from that he's getting tainted meat the day of the night of the competition?
Taco truck, maybe? I don't know.
You're 90 years old. You don't taco truck at this point. You don't even know what that means.
That's true. Yeah, it's definitely one where you feel bad for the guy. You hope that it wasn't intentional. The data suggests that it wasn't.
Well, you only feel bad for him if it wasn't intentional.
Right, that's true. Well, if it was intentional, you maybe feel worse.
I wonder what his toilet was like that night.
Right.
Poor maid.
But yeah, there's a lot of people who are reacting with the typical, oh, they shouldn't waste testing on him. It's like, well... those are the rules. And it's not a random test. It's because he set a world record.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Because when I first read that, I'm like, what a waste.
Right.
But, you know, look, he was the only guy in this field. He didn't have to train. Right. You don't even have to train for this.
Right.
And you get your national championship.
Yeah. If it was just a national championship and they tested him, it's like, that's kind of goofy. Right. It seems like you probably could have used that one extra test in another field. And
I want to know what his time, what was the... was actual time. I didn't get that part. Did you figure out the Wallunga Hill debacle thing?
Yeah, so tonight's not Wallunga Hill. Tomorrow's. Sorry.
But so it ends on Wallunga Hill.
It does.
Typically, I guess they mix it up. And they've had, which makes sense. So Wallunga Hill's the last day?
Yep.
That's good because they've had it usually the day before and then they have like a boring circuit the last day.
Yeah, they usually do one through like Adelaide proper or something. Right, right. And it's really just like,
Yeah, so well, it's good to see them mixing it up. Oh, speaking of the women... So Amanda Spratt won the women's tour down under. I think she won like two of the three stages, Mitchelton team. So I think she's won the last 3 years of that. So didn't see much on the highlights for that, but that's what I got for there. Did you notice any women?
The only thing that I noticed was a video from Canyon SRAM
that was a good one.
That floated around on my social media feed yesterday. From what I understand, it was from one of the earlier stages. And there was a little kind of mid-corner collision between a Canyon SRAM rider. It looked like a Unisaw rider. And there was a quick unclip by the Canyon SRAM rider. And she was able to not only keep it upright, but just go right back into pedal stroke without really missing more than a beat.
When you first see it, it looks like she's doing a kick.
Right.
Like kicking someone's door. but a closer inspection, it looks like your foot gets caught up. I don't know if it's in spokes or what, and it gets popped out of the pedals. And yeah, so it was impressive. Do you remember who that was?
Nope.
I don't remember either, but it was Cameron SRAM, you said, right?
Canyon SRAM, yeah, it was a team, but I don't know which rider.
Okay, how about some things that make you go, hmm? Things that make you go, hmm. Chris, what do you got?
Watching the Tour Down Under, the People's Choice Classic, there's a lot of disc brakes floating around in the Pro Peloton, and it seems like there was, you know, a lot of resistance 2 years ago from pro riders. They were terrified of riding around people with like chop saws and whatnot.
There was that famous video that Kaylee Fretz did at Velo News at the time when he was at Velo News. We had it, and he had a shoe, and he was trying to cut it open.
Right. Couldn't do it, surprisingly. But
I blame him.
Yeah, I don't know if it's riders are A, they just don't care, B, they feel like there's an actual benefit to be had by using the disc brakes, or if it's the most likely one, which is C, is that their manufacturers basically say, these are the bikes you're riding. And it seems like it's maybe an opportunity for the manufacturers to kind of leverage that as a marketing point to get people on disc bikes.
Right. So you have one side of the rear wheel. You have these nasty, gnarly teeth that can rip you to pieces, including your front chain ring.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And then the other side, you have a disc brake that was the concern. Oh, they thought it was like a rotating saw.
Right.
But I mean, I've seen gnarly teeth mark in someone's calf and their shin from the front chain ring. So,
right.
You know, shit happens whichever direction you go. And you're right. For me, it's all about, okay, if it's more about conformity. And I mean that in the sense of, if I have a flat tire and I'm trying to get, you know, neutral support, I want to be able to do it one as quick as possible. And I don't want, you know, it's already bad enough when, you know, I get a wreck and they're like, you do 11 speed, 12 speed,
right.
Nine, no, 10. So that's still a problem. That'd be my biggest concern. And the Pro Tour, they shouldn't have to worry about that. So
I wouldn't think so.
And unlike Froome with his bike, the Mavic support bike with no pedals.
And too small.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're also dealing with a situation of, you know, not just different gearing, but when you are using the disc, if it's not dished identically to the wheel you're taking off, you're just going to get nasty brake rub too. So it's a challenge, I think, that
right. And if they don't get that, then you'll see them bitching, complaining to their mechanic and right. whoever, whatever. So okay.
So I'm trying to find backtracking a little bit. Carl Grove, he was the 90-year-old cyclist
right.
that got popped. His time was 3:06, and it was for the individual pursuit. I'm guessing that's for a 2K
wait
pursuit.
Okay.
So.
That clears isn't that a pursuit typically we have two guys and you go, I know it says individual pursuit, but
well, it's so hard it's to have two guys.
It's just a time trial.
Yeah. When yeah. you don't have anybody else to race against,
right.
you're
well, that was
chasing
my point.
A ghost. They,
is it like, you know, like golf, you do the Masters and the last day or the first one out with the worst score. Sometimes you don't have a partner to team
right.
up with. So they'll have like a pacer, someone that goes out there and just plays with you that doesn't count.
Right.
Maybe that's like that. I mean, you know,
yeah, I don't know if they did that.
Field. Okay. But because it's an individual. My hum is I just saw Strava. Chris Froome did a monster ride. Salvador, or one of his teammates, 140 miles, 22,000 feet of climbing. I think it was in Africa somewhere. Pretty impressive. And I should have put here what his teammate's Strava title was. It was something like, ruined myself, my season's over. Something like that. It was kind of funny. So
did Froome have a totally different title, like Good Monday?
No, it was like showing whatever teammate's name is around Africa, da-da-da, oh. And like literally about the whole continent. It was pretty impressive. 22,000 feet of climbing, and which goes into what we just did. So we went out this last week. They have this race out in, it's Fish Rock. It's out Boonville, which is literally perfectly named. Small town, Boonville, the site of this amazing Grand Fondo. You say race.
I do say
they
race.
They also have an NCNCA race out there. And we went out there, got a cabin. Rode from town, did like 73 miles, 10,000 feet of climbing. Spectacular. So
yeah,
basically
amazing.
Doing Froome basically two loops of this.
Right.
That's what he did.
Yeah. That's rough. It probably wasn't on gravel though.
Right. So there's a 20-mile section of gravel. So let's just talk about it first. We leave town, take a right-hand turn out of town from where we're at, and it immediately is like 12-18% grade.
Yeah.
I mean, for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so.
Right.
I mean, that's how long it took me. There's a bunch of climbing right away. I mean, first 10 minutes, you're like 1,000 feet of climbing. I'm like, sweet, we've only got 9 more to go. Of course, at the time, we're thinking it was only 9,000 feet. But
right. And not only that, but it's like, you know, we're kind of casually riding. We stopped at the descent on the backside of this climb and took some photos, maybe rested it a bit. You know, if you're doing the Fish Rock race or the Boonville Bite Hard Road race, that's a brutal way to start a race. I mean, you're basically,
right.
You've got 200 meters of flat road that leads right into the teeth of this 10-minute climb. And it's not something you can like draft in or anything. It's, you know, it 8% pitches up to 15%, and there's really no respite until you get over the top, and then you're just going straight into a descent.
The whole day for that 10,000 feet was up and down.
Right.
It was, you know, you're blasting downhill where you're not pedaling, or you're in my 28 page boying across the road. So there was no real like ridge line where you're just able to like put it in the big ring and roll it or whatever. It was up and down all day long. So we get out to this Point Arena out on the coast, and go eat at this one place. I don't know if it was you or someone asked this lady about it.
It was John.
And she freaked out when we told her we were going over this Fish Rock road.
It's impossible. You can't do that.
Yeah, she's like, not on road bikes.
Right.
That's impossible.
Yeah, I think initially she thought we were motorcycles or something. Yeah, she. I think every single one of us, there were 8 of us in total, and I think everyone that bought something, she tried to like deter us. Like, you shouldn't do this. It's a bad idea. Not going to make it.
Yeah, she was scared, and which then made me a little worried.
A little bit. Right. But, so we, you know, if we look at the ride in total, when we got to Point Arena, that was maybe 30 miles into 70. We'd gone up a 10-minute climb. We'd gone up a 30-minute climb. And then I think we had gone up another 10-minute climb. There was some really cool descending from the ridge line down into Point Arena. And once we got to Point Arena, it was, you know, you kind of think about it. It's like we just came over all those hills. We have to go back and do it again, but most of it over gravel.
Right. And interesting was it really rained a few days before, really rained the day before. And so a lot of these roads through all that forest were just slick wet still.
Right.
They never dried out the whole day. Matter of fact, coming back, there's like a redwood forest preserve type of thing they were going through. And it was as if it had been raining all day, which it hadn't. It was just a rainforest type of thing. So your descending was, you know, slowed down for that matter, because, you know, we're just road guys. We're not going to be too much out there. But the dirt may have been actually better for those that have done it. It was really packed.
Yeah.
And it was not a problem. It was enjoyable, other than it was super steep. So we hit the gravel. It's like 20 miles.
Yeah.
And that climbing, that first section was really bad for me. It hurt my back. I'm standing up.
Right.
You're literally standing up.
Yeah. No, it I got a picture of that. You know, it was kind of like the first two climbs that we did, except the road conditions were pretty good, but you couldn't really paperboy it. You could really only stay in like the vehicle tracks. You couldn't veer too far because it's really single lane, and it's a packed dirt road. So you really are just forced with going straight up. There's not a lot of side to side you can do, and it just felt like, you know, you come around a corner and you feel like you're going to be able to see the top, or maybe it'll flatten out a bit, but I swear every corner that you turned, it was just another wall of road in your face.
Right. And there was a few times where it started to mellow and I was like, oh, it's starting to feel good. I was really putting it down. And all of a sudden I come around a corner and it's just a wall again.
Right.
And a little demoralizing. I filmed on my GoPro that whole section.
Yeah.
So I have that. At some point I'll put that up for anybody who's remotely interested in watching an hour and 40 minutes of this. But it was very enjoyable. There was, when we started out this climb, I'm off the back because I was trying to start my Garmin. I mean my GoPro. So I'm trying to catch up, and you guys went past, and there was this couple on the side of the road, man, lady, and they were just standing there. And my thinking is, oh, this guy's out here to murder this lady, and now he's got 8 witnesses. He's got to knock off.
Yeah,
but I've got him on film at least. So.
That's good.
But evidently, they were just peeing on the side of the road. So
yeah, side by side, it was kind of strange. We turned a corner, and there's just the two of them standing, or one squatting, one standing, just doing their business. And it was a little odd. They seemed to be a little confused as to why a bunch of bikes were coming past as well.
So we did this whole race. We had plenty of food, ate out there. For me, it was great. I mean, we were a little worried about getting back on time.
Right.
Because, you know, some of the riders, some of them were just having difficulty, and we made it. We made it safe. But did it at all inspire you to maybe do this race? Our times were not anything like Lance and Justin Mock, is that who it was?
Yeah, but they didn't stop for food in Point Arena like we did and get challenged to plank contest and all that stuff. But I think it would be fun to do in that environment. I just think, like I said, it'd be incredibly difficult to like roll right out of the gates into that opening climb and just have any
trainer.
Right. I mean, you got to spend a good 30 minutes warming up to be able to contend in those opening minutes of the climb. But I enjoyed what we did, and I think I'm comfortable with that. I don't know if I would go back and do it in the race, but you never know.
So you said there was an NCNCA race that was instead of we went west, hit the point, and then looped back, but to the south of where we had gone. You say the race itself goes out that same one, but then loops back on the northern side.
Right. That way they stay on a paved road the whole time. It looks like it's a similar amount of climbing, relatively similar distance, but they come back in through. What was the little town we had dinner in? Philo. So they come back in through Philo, and I think they finish in Boonville. It looks like it may have happened 1 or 2 years, but the last time it happened was 2014.
All right.
So even back then, the participation was pretty light.
But you could see it was DePeese and some of the other guys, Theobald, some guys that go uphill decent. So good for them. Anything else you want to say about that besides the fact that we smashed it and then watched some Supercross, and I think I gained weight that weekend? But
No, it was just like I said, it's cool to get out on new roads. The gravel was incredibly difficult, but the descending on it was fun. It was just a different terrain. It was different roads. It was a different environment. So it was really cool. I think if we were a little less concerned about time, we did have a slight crash that added a little bit of time into it as well. But I think it would have been cool to kind of take in some of the Redwood Preserve a little more. But at that point, I think we were just, just kind of cruise and appreciate it. But I think a lot of us were just wiped out. And like I said, the one thing about the road and the course is it's just up and down. There's really nothing in between. Like even the finish, once you get off of Fish Rock Road onto Highway 128, I was kind of in the impression it would just be like a flat stroll back, but it's not. It's just up and down, up and down, up and down.
It was crazy. It was really impressive, actually, to be out there and do that and ride that with you, of course, Kurt and everyone that was out there.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It was really good. San Bruno, that's the first race of the season they've had.
That's the official one.
San Bruno Hill Climb, you want to go through some of those results and maybe some highlights of what you saw there? I see one that you highlighted, and I think I remember talking to you about that.
I didn't see much because I didn't go. But looking at the results, I don't know what the typical attendance at this event is like, but this seemed kind of like maybe what's to be expected for a January 1st hill climb event that kicks off at probably 8 a.m.
Right.
You're probably not going to draw everybody, but some pretty solid times if you look at the times that guys set versus previous year. So it was if we just look at the results, men's P12, Nick Wallace of Cycle Sport got the P12 win with a 16:24. Second place was Justin Paulson. He's a sprinter, but I think he's kind of reformed himself as more of a...
He's small, so I think that's scary, actually, to think about.
He's on the new Sempo Poro team. Oh, okay. I'm not sure if they have another name, but third was Will Brickler, former teammate, and he put up a 17:16. If you look at his time and Paulson's time, I'm guessing that there must have been a bike throw there.
Well, it's Paulson has a sprint.
That's true. 17 minutes, 16 seconds, 0.21 for Justin, and a 17 minutes, 16 second, 0.97 for Will. So that's a good finish there. 35 plus 1-2-3, Will Riffelmacher. He won with a 16:18, so he would have won the P12 race.
It's true.
He's with Olympic Club. Richie Voss, SunPower third. David Mai, Thirsty Bear third. In the women's P12, Tanya Fredericks, she's with Thirsty Bear. She got the win with 19:17. Sawyer Taylor with Swift got second. And Elizabeth Benishin with Splunk Race Team. I'm not familiar with them. She got third. And the one that I did highlight here was actually in the Cat 5 field. And Andrew Holmes, no team listed. He came in with a 15:09.39, so a good minute, 8 seconds faster than Will Riffelmacher's time. So I don't know if he's just a specialist, a guy who got motivated to climb a race or what, but that's a darn good effort. I think his Strava time actually has like a top 10 time, and I think he has data posted to it where it's like 450 watts or something outrageous,
so
like that.
You see that every once in a while with... new rider. I remember when we'd go out and when I was in Colorado and we would do Mount Evans Hill Climb.
Yeah.
And you'd have guys that you hadn't seen all season, you know, they'd show up or they'd smash you. So I remember this one, he was like a runner. He'd come up in running shorts and he would put up an amazing time. He's like a Cat 5, but he could just climb. Right. He just, oh, I could get on my bike and go. Well, Kurt has a friend up in Nevada City. Yeah. He just smashes it like that. It's just, some people are built for that and they don't need much, you know, they could get around a race like that. Not a big field. Don't have to worry about positioning.
But right.
15 minutes. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. When you're putting 2+ minutes on your second place guy, I mean, that's, you pretty much just riding away from everybody at that point.
You've ever been motivated to do that race?
Nope.
Okay. I was a few years ago during that time of year when I was really kind of feeling good. And then, you know, New Year's Day comes and you're like, no, I'm not driving out there. So, you know, local guys or some ones that are motivated, more climbers. So
I guess if you did like New Year's Eve in San Francisco or something and you were down there, maybe.
But then you're really not going to go. I mean, you're going to be partying out there.
You just stay up all night or something.
Right, right. Let's take a look at some of the events that are coming up here in the next month and a half or so, and some of the racing, and then we'll kind of get out of here. But January, if you look on the calendar, DDA, Nate Dunn is doing a training camp. That's this weekend, so I don't know if you even could still sign up, but check it on the calendar. There's info there if you want to do that. I think he's doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Oh, sorry.
A couple Monday, climbing days and then a flat day on Monday. And I think he's got it set up where you can earn upgrade points from a Cat 4 to a Cat 3 by participating. So
there you go.
It's a good opportunity to kind of eke a couple points out.
Pay to upgrade.
Pay to play.
Yeah, I like it. Then next weekend, the 26th, we have Cal Aggie. It's Cal Aggie, right? Not Land Park?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So that's put on by Cal Aggie. That's University of Davis.
But it's not in Davis.
No.
Which I never understood.
No, it's perfectly fine. So that's the first race of the season. That'll be fun. We'll obviously talk about that.
Yep.
And you're doing Placer-Roubaix this weekend, a dirt fondo type of thing.
Now, this one's described as not a race, while Fish Rock is a full-on mass start race. So,
well, it's I think it on the thing it says Grand Fondo.
On what thing?
The Fish Rock website.
No,
I think so.
They do not.
I made one just last night for it called the Fish Rock Grand Fondo. Well, F you. Okay, so I'm wrong on that one, which I don't mind being. So, February, then we have the Folsom Winter Crit. That's the next week.
Right.
Bump Circuit Race. That's on the 3rd. And then we got Cherry Pie, Snelling, Merced all coming up in February. March, we're doing Madera stage race, Chico stage race, Winchester, Auburn Crit. Chico is confirmed for March 29th to 31. They've already announced that out. So,
right.
You know, get your lodging quick because...
not that quick, though, because we got to get ours
first. Wait, we'll announce this out. I'll hold this podcast production until we get ours. But yeah, the campfire that was up there is obviously... I have some friends who... actually, as soon as that happened, they went and got online and rented some houses, him and his parents, two different houses in Chico. I mean, so Chico's, you know, obviously inundated with that as well. So it's probably difficult to get some stuff there. Any those races, you're going to probably do all of that, right?
I'll probably do Cal Aggie. Folsom Winter Crit is, you know, a mile from home. So I'll probably do that one. Outside of that, Snelling, probably do Snelling. I've had some interest in Cherry Pie, but it didn't go so well last year, so we'll see how we feel about that.
We've been talking about that one.
So
you wrecked in a roundabout. Took out a Pete's rider.
I did.
Did he forgive you? You guys have an ongoing feud now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I apologized afterward, and it seemed like we were okay. Winchester, I'll probably do that one. That's such a great course. Such a fun race.
Right.
I think everybody should do that.
And Auburn. Pretty pumped for both of those.
Yeah.
And when I say pumped, I mean heavy.
Plumped. You're plumped for
him. I'm plumped for him, yeah.
Auburn's tough if you're not fit, man. That's a brutal course. And Chico, I do enjoy Chico. So
I did Auburn, 2 years ago, not fit. I'd been coming off of some whatever.
Winter
and sick and whatever. My training was really low, and I hung in. So it was one of those days where I just kept hanging on and hanging on. And I think I was like 6 or something. So it wasn't so bad. But it's just, I love that race so much that I think I dug super deep just because it's fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's an enjoyable one. So last thing. Okay. Just We're going to mention a sponsor real quick. I know we've got this Health IQ once again, healthiq.com/BTW to get life insurance quotes. I've told you I'm now the proud owner of life insurance policy. Myself, my wife, we both did it. Great rates. Pretty easy to do. They come up to your house to do all the testing, take care of everything. It was real simple. HealthIQ.com/BTW, and it supports the show. So if you want to help support the show, get us better. We're in a new studio. It's still under development here. But the more you help us, the more we get to go on vacation.
That's true. Yeah.
Winners and losers, speaking of which. You got any for us this week?
Winner so far has just been Patty Bevin. You know, he's been, he's kind of like the Woods of 2 years ago, where he's just jumped on the scene and really made his presence known here at the Tour Down Under. So it's cool to see, especially coming off his national championship win. I think he's got a shot to potentially win it.
Right.
The overall, if he can hang on Willunga Hill. So it's just good to see him, and not only just him, but CCC kind of come on strong right from the get-go. And it was kind of like a little unsure as to how that team would be able to perform on the right. on the world tour.
So. Well, I don't know who I'm going to be pulling for, because I don't really care port whatever, but I'd like to see Woods do well.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting. Bennett, I wouldn't mind to see him do well, but Patty Bevin, I'd kind of like to see him and MP. Yeah, there's a lot of
good guys to cheer for.
Right. Any losers?
Not really a loser, but it was kind of a bummer to see Caleb Ewan not be able to capitalize on his, not just being on a new team, but being on a new team in his home race. Just, I mean, he's really flubbed the two good opportunities he's had to get a proper stage win so far. I think he might have one more shot.
Today?
Yeah, it has to be today. Oh, that's tomorrow. Belunga's later. Yeah,
we've determined that now.
So, he's got to step it up if he really wants to stick it to Mitchelton Scott. You
he
know.
So he had to drop his, I guess he had to drop his coach going to the new team.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, he said he couldn't work with him anymore. He seemed somewhat disappointed. So he's with a new one. He's going to see how this goes. And so, it, you know, you never know what they work on. But he looked really good in the People's Choice Classic. You roll your eyes. I say, I'm just talking about the jersey. No, he looked good. He hit the front, and right. They weren't coming around him. So and then, you know, Sagan's won after that. So it's not like, I mean,
right.
Viviani, though, I'd like to see a proper sprint with all those guys, because Viviani, the way he came through all the debris, when I said debris, I mean like riders.
Right.
It would be interesting to see how he and Caleb do like on a duel head to head. Okay, so that's your loser. I got a winner real quick. Andrew Shimizu, Arya Kiani. They're on a trip in Colombia right now. Posting pictures, I guess they're riding with Egan Bernal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rigoberto Urán, is he down there? I don't know. Let's just start. Chavez was another one.
I see a
one.
Picture with Chavez.
So they're down in like the heart of Narcos land. If you've ever watched the TV show on Netflix. I don't think it's quite like that anymore. So, but it's impressive. Good for them. They're doing some big rides, getting a lot of fun riding to be able to come back and just talk about, you know, who they were hanging out with. I don't know if there's a communication problem, but
have you looked at any of their rides?
Pretty good English.
I mean, they're doing a ton of climbing at elevation. I mean, they're going to come back so fit.
Or burnt. Watch out, Land Park.
I don't think he's coming back in time for Land Park, right?
What's another? Pine Flat or Bump? I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll keep you updated on that. Loser for me is, I don't know, saw this and I laughed. Filippo Pozzato, former Milan San Remo winner, true Italian man of fashion. I don't know if you've ever seen him. He set in his new career, wait for it, roller hockey. Now, this, and I saw pictures of him. I'm like, oh, okay. This is not roller blades. He's doing roller hockey. So think of like WeHo, you know, Hollywood down there on the boardwalk, you know, with your roller skates cruising around. He had short shorts even. Holding your stick in your hand. Well, a lot of comparisons to be there. But anyway, loser for him, because I think, and actually the most impressive thing was he sounded like he really was big into this when he was a teenager.
Okay.
And now he's lamenting the fact that he went almost like, I wish I wouldn't have gone down this cycling route and wasted my life. I feel like I threw away 14 years. I could have been doing roller hockey.
So, I mean, this is a thing? I didn't know.
He's on like an amateur team. Okay. I mean,
is there a pro team?
It's like a club sport. I don't know. Have you seen Strange Brew, the documentary about Canadians in a brewery?
No.
Well, they go into they play a little roller. Well, the real hockey, I think it's what they play. But you've never seen Strange Brew?
I haven't. So yeah, it doesn't.
Check it out sometimes. Check out Strange Brew. It's a great 1980s movie. Anything else for you before we head out for the weekend?
No, I'm just looking forward to a good weekend of riding.
Is it going to be, how's the weather? Because it's been pounding rain. I had to do my first trainer ride of not only in 2019, but of like a long time.
Yeah. No, it's clear tomorrow.
Okay.
Crappy on Sunday.
Oh.
Good on Monday.
Oh.
So, okay. Hey, good opportunity to get a good ride, a recovery day, and another good ride.
Maybe we'll come into the office, do some work Sunday, and then skip out on Monday.
It's a holiday on Monday for some folks.
I know. So that's why I do that.
Okay.
Before we go, so we got hit with a skunk this last week. Came home Sunday night. It's the smell. It's the dogs got nailed and it did not smell like skunk, but I'm like, something's wrong. And I text you and Kurt, and Kurt's like, smell like burnt rubber. That's a skunk. That's exactly what it was like. By then we figured out the dogs had been all over the house. So my wife even got sent home from work this week.
That's tough.
It's tough. That's tough. The house is finally, I've never seen the house look clean. Everything's washed. It's been a fun one. So I don't know what that has to do with anything other than I just wanted to.
I got to say, complain. Kurt was on it. I mean, his advice was just.
He was.
He looked like a helpline. I mean, he was.
I stopped searching the internet. I just would randomly complain on to a text and he would post it up. Well, he said he had had it himself. Now, when he says he had it, he claimed there was a skunk that got into his screen door or something like this.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe him, but he did know all the remedies. So
he had lived it in some way or another.
Right. My tip to you, baking soda and not tomato juice. That's a fallacy. So
good to know. Yeah. I'll avoid the skunks just in general, so I don't have to go through it.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Any, Kurt, you want to? No. Okay, so until next time, everybody, thank you for joining us. Chris, once again, my handyman here, always doing the research. Appreciate that. Any corrections you want to make before we step out that you may have stepped in on today?
Me?
Yeah.
No, we'll lean on listeners to provide some corrections.
All right.
I've done my part so far.
Yes, you have. Thanks again. So episode 96, thanks you once again. Check us out, Between Two Wheels podcast. Share the show. We're trying to really launch into the stratosphere for 2019. So far, it's a good approach.
It's been good so far.
It's been good. Stitcher, Podbeam, Overcast.fm. We're out there everywhere. YouTube channel, Facebook page, Between Two Wheels. And check you out next time. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, see ya.
Bye.
This is Astana Pro Team.